So if you've been around the church during the week, for the last few weeks, you maybe have met a really cool young woman who's been hanging around here about 20 hours a day. Her name is Bethany. I think we have a picture of Bethany for you. And Bethany is amazing and talented and smart and successful. And she has a great marriage and she has two beautiful, busy girls. And she's super invested and involved in their lives and school and sports. And a couple of years ago, while she was building a successful corporate career at USAA, in her spare time, she started a business doing what she really loves doing with art, and that is creating these amazing murals. And so within 2 months of starting this little side hack, she was so successful that she left her job at USAA to do it full time. And she is great at it, so she's in high demand. So she works tons of hours trying to keep up. Plus, in her spare time, she started another business, mentoring other artists and other business people. And she's just now finishing up the work on this masterpiece in our kids' hall. I think we've got a picture of that. It's just crazy beautiful back there. And she's an amazing woman, and she's living an amazing life. But when I ran into her a few weeks ago in the kids' hall, and I just asked her, "How's it going?" And with her mouth, she said, "Great." But the expression on her face and her posture said anything but great. It didn't tell me that her life was great. It was not showing me any joy or peace or enthusiasm or thankfulness or any indication that she was really enjoying her amazing life and her amazing success. What I saw in her countenance and her posture and the look on her face was more like fatigue and frustration and anxiety and exhaustion and exasperation. People like to throw around the term burnout, but it's something between weariness and despair. In fact, that day she told me that the previous Sunday at her church, she'd been like seating people and just, you know, serving and doing what she always does. And she just had a meltdown in church and just started crying and couldn't stop. And there was no reason. Nothing had happened. And she just felt overwhelmed, like she'd hit a wall. The way she described it was she felt like she'd been living her whole life in a full sprint and suddenly she tripped. She crashed. She couldn't figure out how to get back up. And I think maybe it's not even a cautionary tale. Maybe her story is just relatable for so many of us because we're all going so hard and we're all working overtime and multitasking and doing more and getting better and going faster. We're all like striving and straining and working extra shifts and overtime and trying to pay our bills and do our jobs and raise our kids. And plus we got social stuff and church stuff and sports stuff. And we can't slow down. And it feels like we're swimming in a really raging river. And if we slow down, even for a second, we'll drown. So we don't. And you know why we keep doing it? You know why we subscribe to this insane, hectic, frantic pace in life? Because in this world, it works. Going fast and going hard and being first and being best works. And it's exactly what we've been talking about. This world, whether we know it or not, is forming us. And one way it's forming us is by rewarding us for certain behaviors. And look around, man. Overachievers and workaholics are some of the most productive, best paid, most respected people in the world. That's what life has taught us. Since she was a little girl, Bethany has learned that when she really pushed hard, when she really ran fast, when she really did good, then good stuff happened. And it pleased people. It pleased her parents and her teachers, and her coaches, and her professors, and her bosses, and her clients. And hard work got her where she wanted to go. And life formed her. And over time, she began to realize that if straight A's were good, then straight A's in honors classes must be even better. And if working really hard, 40 or 50 hours a week was good, working really hard 60 or 70 or 80 hours a week. Must be even better. Life has taught her that if taking things seriously brought success, then worrying all the time must bring even more success. And if doing a great job well was good, then crushing two jobs must be better. And the more she overworked, and the more she overstressed, and the more she overachieved, the more she succeeded. And the more things worked out, and her drive and pushing herself brought success in every area of her life. She got the grades. She made the team. She got the job. She got the money. She got promoted. She won the awards. She's raising amazing kids. In every area, the harder and longer and faster she worked, the more she succeeded, and the more she was rewarded with grades and promotions and awards and pay raises. And life has taught her. I remember people telling me this when I was in corporate America as a young, young kid. If it is to be, it's up to me. And if I want the good stuff, then I got to be better. I got to be stronger. I got to be faster. I got to go longer. And it worked for her. And I think a lot of us have experienced that. And that experience forms us. And so like Bethany, we find ourselves busier than ever, with jobs and second jobs and activities and kids' activities. Plus, we're spending 2 or 3 hours a day on social media, which leaves us even less time to do more stuff. So we're busier than ever, we're more successful than ever, we're richer than ever, and we are more anxious and frustrated and exhausted and irritable and exasperated than ever. And it's not a new phenomenon, but it does seem to be getting worse. You know, before everybody had electric lights and screens in their house. When it got dark, people went to bed. You know, in 1900, the average American slept 9 to 10 hours a night. Have you ever slept 9 or 10 hours? And an average American now sleeps around 7 hours a night. And with phone notifications constantly dinging, we're never really at rest. Today, about 90% of Americans sleep with their phones where they can reach them because we're scared to miss anything. I mean, God forbid that we miss another post about Donald Trump being the Messiah or the Antichrist, depending on your algorithm, right? Or whatever. Or another video of a squirrel playing the piano with a cat or something. You know, God forbid we miss one of those things. One recent study showed that 46% of Americans sleep with their phone in their bed with them or in their hands. So even when we're not emailing while we're running between our second job and our third soccer practice of the day, we're never really off duty. You know, even our phones are demanding our energy and our attention. We're in constant demand. You know, we're never off duty. We're never out of reach. We're never really at rest. And even our kids are stressed out. You know, between the crazy demands of school and sports, plus spending 4 hours a day on social media, they're exhausted and they're exasperated too. So, like, how's this working out for us? Estimates are that from 1990 till 2019, before COVID, cases of depression in American adults went up 900%. 900%. In 2000, about 23% of high schoolers reported persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness. By 2021, that number had doubled. So now around 50% of high school students, 50% of high school students report persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness. And depression and anxiety and self-harm rates are higher and rising faster in younger people. So it doesn't seem like we're on a great trajectory, right? John 10:10, Jesus said, the reason he came, his purpose in coming here was to give us rich, satisfying, abundant lives. But it seems like most of us are living overstressed, overwhelmed, totally unsatisfying lives. It's like we're trying so hard to achieve the things that'll give us joy and pleasure and satisfaction and peace that we don't have the time or the energy or even the desire left to enjoy them. But there's great news. The Bible actually offers a remedy for some of the exhaustion and exasperation and frustration and anxiety and stress that we all deal with in our regular, frantic, busy, hectic lives. And the remedy is actually one of the practices of Jesus, and it's called Sabbath. So Sabbath is ideally a full day, once a week, to just stop working and worrying and stressing, to just rest and delight and worship and be. And now, before you start thinking about how impossible that is because of your schedule and your calendar and how incredibly important you are, before you start going down that road, let's talk about why. Like, what is the purpose of Sabbath? And I think in my mind, Sabbath for us does three things. The first thing is it restores and it refreshes your body and your mind and your spirit. You know, God created you. He designed you and he wired you and he knows how you work best. You know, the term highest best use. God knows what you were designed to do and what's the most effective way for you to live. And let me tell you something, you were not designed to go slow. And you were not designed to go all the time. You were designed to go really hard and really fast and do a whole lot for 6 days and then shut down for 1 day and then start all over again. That's the way your body, that's the way your mind, that's the way your soul was created to work. So one of the purposes for experiencing Sabbath is it restores and refreshes our body and our mind and our spirit. The second thing is it creates space. We keep talking about this with all of Jesus's practices. This practice of Sabbath creates time and space for God to transform us. We keep saying, I can't transform myself, right? I can't make myself more like Jesus, but I can stop and offer God this space and this time in my life to transform me. And so many people say, you know, I don't feel God. I don't feel God. I never hear God talking to me. And I think some of us are just too busy to hear him. And Sabbath gives us like time, bandwidth to listen. And as he reminds us of his faithfulness and his love, and as he recharges us and encourages us, those things transform us. So Sabbath creates space for God to do this transformative work in us. And then the last thing is it allows us to experience samples of God's kingdom. We talk about this all the time, right? These things like peace and rest and joy and community and the presence of God. So Sabbath offers really three, I think, great purposes, great benefits, refreshing us, body, mind, and spirit, transforming us, making us more like Jesus, and giving us just a little insight, just a little sample, just a little taste of what his kingdom will be like here when we fully experience God's presence and we fully experience peace and rest and joy and purpose. So is Sabbath counterintuitive? We keep throwing that word around. Does it feel weird? Yes. Yes, I'll just you don't have to tell me it feels weird. I'm telling you, right? It's counterintuitive. It feels weird, and you know why? You know why it feels weird to stop? Because we've been formed by a world where what I produce is my value. And the more I produce, the more I matter. So yeah, being formed by that world for us, Sabbath feels weird. Is it countercultural? Does it look weird to your friends? Yes. Yes, because they've been formed too. And when you take something off your calendar, or when you turn off your phone, or when you spend time doing nothing, like resting and relaxing, spending time with your family and with your friends and with God's, or God, your friends will think you are crazy. Is it counterintuitive? Yeah. Is it countercultural? Yeah. Is it hard? Yeah. Yeah, you guys are doing it, right? Our full-time staff has been really trying to experience Sabbath for about 6 months right now. And it's amazing, and it's been powerful, but we are still trying to work out the kinks because our lives are not set up like that anymore, right? So like we said, well, you know what we'll do? We'll call Sunday our Sabbath. So we'll start with worship. We'll start with praise. That'll be great. And then we'll have this amazing day of rest and peace and not work or worry. Well, that doesn't work that good for me. Yeah, I work Sundays, yeah? And a lot of you work Sundays, right? And so, well, I can't do it. We tried Tuesday. Tuesday doesn't work. We tried Wednesday mornings. That doesn't work either. We're still, like, trying to work the kinks out of the best time and the best place and the best way to do this thing. But the bottom line is our schedules are packed. And if we're gonna make time to really stop and rest and delight and worship, something good on our calendar is going to have to go. And so, yeah, that can't go. Is it hard to give up something that's good in exchange for something that's better? Yeah, it's hard. But if we are really Jesus followers, right? What is one thing all followers do? They follow, right? I mean, if we're really Jesus followers, then we'll follow his teaching and we'll follow his model. And if we want to live the kingdom life that Jesus said he came to give us, if we want the joy and the peace and the passion, if we want the full communion with the Father that Jesus had, we need to follow him, whether it's counterintuitive, countercultural, hard, or not. So the question isn't, is it counterintuitive? Is it countercultural? Is it hard? The question is it biblical? Right? So next week, we're going to get really super practical. But first today, we're going to make sure we're on solid ground theologically with Sabbath, because I know there may be some questions about that. So start with the Old Testament. Sabbath is mentioned over 100 times in the Old Testament, and it is a huge part of the law that was given to the Israelites on Mount Sinai when they left Egypt and they were going across the big bad desert and all that stuff. In fact, it's one of the Ten Commandments. It's one of the Ten Commandments. I'll ask you this. Are there any other of the Ten Commandments that we brag about breaking? Yeah. But we brag all the time that we don't have time for Sabbath, right? I'm too busy. I'm too important. A lot of people depend on me. Like, I've done it. I've bragged many times. I've never bragged about dishonoring my parents, right? I've never bragged about all the people I've killed or lied to or committed adultery with. I've never bragged about any of that stuff. But we're Americans, right? We're Texans for crying out loud. It's like Americans only more so, right? We brag all the time about breaking the Sabbath. It was punishable by death in the Old Testament to break the Sabbath. Here it is, Exodus 28. It's in the Big Ten. Remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. God says you have 6 days every week for your ordinary work. Because in 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and everything in them. But on the seventh day, he rested. And that is why the Lord blesses the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. I think it's really interesting. It says God rested on the seventh day. Do you think, like, was he tired? Was God, like, all sweaty? You know, like, oh, God, whoo, finally. You know, the six hardest days ever, right? It's hard to understand why it says God is tired. And I think it comes down, there's a couple of Hebrew words, if you'll bear with me on this, in this passage. This word, Shabbat, in Hebrew, we call it Sabbath. It means to stop. That's what it means, to cease. If you're an English major, you'll love this. Think of the word still as a verb. That's Sabbath, to still yourself is to Sabbath. And then the second word, the word that we've translated here for God resting, is actually the word nuach. Rhymes with ruach. Yeah. Say it, it's fun, nuach. You'll know you say it right, as we always say, if you spit on the person in front of you, right? So, nuach, all right? And what it means is like to settle in, like to settle down. They would use it like if you move in to someplace, Noah's Ark came to Nuach on the mountain. It came to settle. It came to still. It came, that was where it means to dwell, to abide. So that verse says that on the seventh day, God stopped working and Nuached, right? So like I worked for a year building my house, and then when all the work was done, since the work was done, I could stop. I could cease. I could Sabbath. And then I could move into my house and Nuach. And I could settle down and settle in and just dwell there, just abide there, just be there, just enjoy my life there. So after God's 6 days of creation, the seventh day was intended to be the day of Nuach. Seventh day was intended to be this day where God and man settled down and settled in together. He created this amazing world so that we could be with him, so that we could just live together and abide together and just be together. And I don't know if you ever noticed this in the creation story, but days 1 through 6 all end the same. Right? If you read that story, at the end of every passage, okay, day 1, God created all this great stuff, and the evening and the morning were the first day. Day 2, God created all this stuff, and the evening and the morning were the second day. And it just keeps repeating like that all through the sixth day, but the seventh day does not say that, because the seventh day never ended. This time of God and man nuaching together and living in peace and rest was supposed to be every day, from then on, forever. We were supposed to move in with God. We were supposed to settle in with God and settle down with God and just be with God. But once that got sidetracked by the snake and sin and man being separated from God, it wasn't going to happen that we could nuach with God all the time. So God gave this commandment for his people to every week keep a separate holy day where they would just Sabbath. They would stop and cease work and just trust that God was going to provide for them. So they could stop worrying and they could stop working and they could stop stressing and they could just nuach. They could just be still and know that God is God and trust his faithfulness. So in the Old Testament, Sabbath was looking like back, right, at the life that God had created and this amazing world that he had built, and also a chance to kind of experience a taste of what Eden was supposed to be, a place where they could just trust God so much that they could rest in his provision. They could just remain with him. They could just settle down and abide in his presence. They could just be together with each other and also with God. And God knew that they needed that physically, and he knew that they needed that mentally, and they needed it spiritually. They needed a day just to reconnect, to just be with God. And he was so sure, God, the creator, the designer, was so sure that that was best for man that he made it a law. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. So here's my question for you. That's Old Testament. Are we under that law now?
No.
Trick question. It's not a trick question. Are we made right with God by keeping the law? No, we're in the New Testament now, and we're made right with God by our faith in Messiah Jesus. But in Matthew 5:17, look what Jesus says. He says, don't think that I've come to abolish the law or the prophets. I haven't come to abolish them. I've come to fulfill them. So all of those laws, we talk about them, 600 and something laws that they had to be made right with God. They had to keep all those laws about how to live with each other, all the laws about animal sacrifice and blood and all the stuff that they had to do. All of those laws had a purpose. And for Jesus, he says, I haven't come to abolish those laws. I've come to fulfill them. And fulfilling the law doesn't just mean that Jesus kept the laws. It means that he came to bring the law to its intended goal. He came to fulfill the law. He came to accomplish what the law was designed to do. So I'm going to look real quickly at the purposes of some of these Old Testament laws, and let's see how Jesus fulfilled those laws. So the Old Testament sacrificial laws, where they're, you know, sacrificing animals and all that good stuff, the purpose of that was to enable people to have a relationship with the Father, right? They were supposed to keep all the laws. They wouldn't. And when they would fail to keep all the laws, then they reverted to animal sacrifice. And somehow, this blood of this animal, like, purified them and made it possible for them to have relationship with the Father. So the Old Testament sacrificial laws enabled people to have a relationship with God. Jesus didn't abolish the sacrificial law. He came to be the sacrifice. So the Old Testament relational laws, those ensured flourishing and great relationships between people. So don't lie to each other. Don't kill each other. Don't steal from each other. But Jesus came and gave us his Holy Spirit in us. In the exchange, he says, our heart of stone for a heart of flesh, so that we could not only know how to treat each other, that we would actually love each other. And that love fulfilled the law. Because as we love each other with his love, we don't lie to each other. We don't kill each other. We don't steal from each other. The Old Testament laws also reflected God's character to the world. God wanted to reveal himself to the world, so he was going to do it through his people, through all of these laws, so that the whole world could see his holiness and his justice and his mercy and his love. And when Jesus came, he lived that out. He absolutely reflected the holiness and justice and mercy and love of God to the world. And the Old Testament Sabbath laws pointed back to Eden, in this place of Nuach, this rest, this abiding with God. And it pointed forward to the rest they were going to have in the promised land. And ultimately, they looked forward to the eternal rest that they would have with Father. And Jesus fulfilled that law of rest. Because in Matthew 11:28, he said, if you're tired, if you're exhausted, if you're exasperated, if you're burned out, if you're in fatigue and despair, he said, if you're weary, if you need rest, come to me. So Jesus didn't take away the Sabbath. He fulfilled it. Because now we find our relationship with God. We find our relationship with each other. We find God's holiness and mercy and justice and love. We find our rest. We find all of those things that the law was designed to provide. We find all of those things in Jesus, in the New Testament. In the New Testament. In the New Testament, Hebrews 4:6 says God's rest is there for people to enter. But those who first heard this good news failed to enter because they disobeyed God. So God set another time for entering his rest, and that time is today. And that's in the New Testament. But for us, the Sabbath is not a law. It's a blessing of rest. Sabbath is not a law for us. It's a gift to us. So in the Old Testament, the Sabbath was looking back and remembering this place of rest, this place of Eden that God always wanted, where they could really experience God and his provision and his protection and his purpose and his peace and his joy and his love. So once a week, they would shut down and they would stop striving and stressing, and they would experience a reminder of the peace and rest of just being with God and with each other, and not stressing about providing for themselves, but instead remembering and resting in the provision of God. So for them in the Old Testament, Sabbath was mostly a time to look back, yeah, and to remember Eden and God's provision. But for us in the New Testament, it's also a time to look forward. It's also a place for us to look forward to the peace and rest and Nuach that Jesus is going to bring us in the kingdom of God when he finally returns. And as Revelation 21 says, he's going to make all things new again. And he's going to restore God's world to this place that it was intended to be, where there is no war, and there is no hate, and there is no death, or tears, or disease, or demons, or separation from God. And you know what? There'll also be no more sin there. And this is really important to remember. Philippians 1:6 says, I'm confident that God is going to continue the work that he began in you until that work is fully finished and you're just like Jesus on the day Jesus comes back, right? So the day that Jesus comes back, that means there's going to be no more sin in his kingdom. And remember, sin is the thing that interrupted the Nuach of day 7. So when Jesus comes back and we're made fully like him, when we're fully sinless, that's when we will really, fully, finally experience the seventh-day rest that God intended in the garden. And we'll fully rest in his provision, in his purpose, in his peace, in his presence. So for us, Sabbath is not just a look backwards. It's also a look forward. And it's also a day for us just to, like, practice. Right? Remember this? Remember the circles? Because I got my hula hoops right over here. I'll bring them out. Don't make me. So, like, remember, like, it was God's place and man's space were the same space, and they got separated, and then Jesus came to bring them back together again. But now we live where? In the overlap. Right now we live in that really weird space, the already and not yet of God's kingdom. And even though his kingdom has not fully come, in this overlap we can experience little tastes of his kingdom here and now. Kingdom samples of healing and freedom and joy and love and peace and unity and rest and God's presence. Sabbath is one of those samples where we take a day to stop. We take a day to Sabbath and just experience his provision and his peace and his presence. And it's not just that we stop our physical work, because now we know that Jesus is our provider and he's totally faithful to us. It's also a day that we can rest in him spiritually, because we know that our salvation doesn't come from our work. Right? Our salvation comes from him. So we no longer have to work for our salvation. So we can rest in Jesus spiritually, as well as physically, as well as mentally. We're free from slavery to sin or shame or performance or religion. We're at rest in Jesus. So for us in the New Testament, Sabbath isn't a law to keep. It's a gift to enjoy. It's a day to look forward to the rest that we're someday going to have fully in his kingdom. And it's a day to kind of practice resting in Jesus. And I think really inside, most of us know. I think most of us sense that we need Sabbath rest. I think most of us know that we need time to stop working and striving and stressing and just be, you know, just be ourselves and just be with each other and just be with God. I think we know we need it. We just don't know how to stop all the crazy, all the, you know, jobs and money and bills and pressures and meetings and phones and kids' activities. And it's hard because the world has formed us. We're addicted to the pace. We're addicted to the worry. We're addicted to the hurry. And I was talking to Bethany about this, and she told me that she's tried lots of times to get on top of this, like, addiction to hurry. And she said her whole life, she found out she could overcome anything with just pure effort and pure drive, except this. And it was just wearing her out. And she knew it. She knew it. She kept trying. In fact, she told me in 2025, she picked a word for the year. And that word was slow. And she said that word helped her so much for the first 4 weeks. And, right? And she told me, lots of people gave her this great book. You should read this book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. John Mark Comer, there's a picture of it. A great book about how we all need to just slow down and spend time with God and spend time with each other and just stop. And a whole bunch of people kept giving her that book, but she was too busy to read it. So not to make fun, but I'm going to make fun. So she said she couldn't take the time to read that book, so you know what she did? She got it the Audible version, and that way she could listen to it while she worked. Do you see the irony of that? She's reading, she can't read this book because she's too busy working. She can't even listen to it now, so she listened to it while she worked at 1.6 speed. So that's how jacked up she is, right? So it's, no, that's not, that's how hard this addiction is to break. And I think now she sees, And I hope that we'll all begin to see that, who knows, maybe Jesus knew what he was talking about. You know, maybe he didn't just model Sabbath arbitrarily for us. Maybe he knew that it's a secret. It is the secret to restoring and refreshing your body and your soul and your spirit. It is the secret to creating space so that God can speak to us and be with us and transform us. It is the secret to experiencing his kingdom and samples of his presence and his peace and his joy and his life. So Bethany's here today, and she is joining us for this Sabbath journey. And I hope that you will too. We've got something like 125 women out on retreat today, so we don't want to go too far without them. Next week, we'll start officially talking about Sabbath and officially start experiencing Sabbath. And for the next 5 weeks, we're going to be talking about it in sermons on Sunday. It's going to be super practical. We're actually going to try it out during the week, and then we're going to discuss it in our groups. In fact, if you're not in a group that's going to be doing the Sabbath practice with us, you can go back to the Connection Center, grab one of those cards, and just write Sabbath groups on there, and even like the day you want to meet or something, and Lauren will call you this week, and we'll get you hooked up for a Sabbath group. And I'm just going to tell you now, so that you don't have to spend your time emailing me. I'll just tell it to you. It's going to feel weird, and it's going to look weird to your friends. And I know everybody is too busy for this. And I don't want you to freak out, so I'm going to tell you two things. These are really important. Just to put your mind at ease, okay? You remember the bracelets that said WWJD? Remember the bracelets? What did that stand for? Yeah, so with Sabbath and with all these practices, we're going to talk about WWJDIHWM. And you know what that stands for? What would Jesus do if he were me? Right? Your life is probably a little different than Jesus' life. And I'll just tell you, Jesus kept a 24-hour Sabbath from Friday evening till actually probably a 25-hour, if you want to be honest, from Friday evening till Saturday evening. But if you have three jobs and you're in medical school and you have newborn twins and you're taking care of aging parents and you're nursing your spouse back from a surgery and you just started a church, your Sabbath may be different than Jesus. Right? Eventually, ultimately, it's a full day, but even if it's an hour or a couple of hours, we're looking first for an attitude of Sabbath, right? An attitude of resting in the provision of God, yeah? More than keeping the rules of Sabbath. Remember what Jesus said, man wasn't made for Sabbath, right? God didn't create Sabbath and then create people to keep it. He said, no, Sabbath is created for man. It's not a law for us to keep. It's a gift for us to enjoy. So that's the first thing. Just don't freak out. Oh, I don't have 24 hours. Well, I have football on Friday night. Don't just chill. Just ruach a little bit about it, you know? And the second thing is, remember this, as you're looking at your calendar and you're thinking about how important it is, Sabbath isn't asking you to add anything to your schedule. It's not. In fact, it's almost certainly going to require that you take some things off your schedule. And I'll just tell you, maybe even some good things. And that's hard to do. But if we fully trust Jesus, we'll follow his ways. And as we do what we can do, he'll do in us what we can't do. He'll make us more like him. He'll transform us into new creations, kingdom people of love and joy and purpose and energy and passion and peace and rest. People that are in full communion with the Father. People like Jesus. So that's enough for now. Thank you for being here today. Let me leave you with a blessing. As you follow this practice of Jesus, may you be restored and recharged and refreshed. And may God use this practice to make you more and more like Jesus. And may you experience his kingdom in samples of Shabbat Shalom, the peace of the Sabbath. Amen.